Okay, thank you very much. Before starting, it's a pleasure to be here, and I want to thank everybody here for giving me the opportunity to present my work. The topic I will be talking today about is based on basically on this work, on some work in progress that has been done in collaboration with Yan-Hui He from University of Pennsylvania, Chris Herzog here, Johannes Walcher, who was at some point here also, my advisor, Amichai Hanani, Pavlos Kazakopoulos, another graduate student from MIT. And if time permits, I will also talk a little bit about some work in progress with Amichai Hanani and with Ángel Uranga from Spain. Okay, so let me give you a brief idea of how I will organize the talk so you have more or less some idea of the structure of what I'm going to talk about. I will begin with some introductory part in which I will describe how to engineer some field theories using differential singularities, how to induce RC flows in these theories, and how to use cyber-duality to talk about some specific type of RC flow, which is cascading RC flows. Then I will develop some general methodology to track some more generic RC flows, basically coming from D-brain, some more difficult, more intricate singularities and the conifold one. I will consider one example. I will show you how to construct supergravity duals that show all this behavior that we will see on the field theory. And finally, I will talk about what is the infrared behavior of these cascades. So let me start with some introduction. One of the big ideas of string theory in the last years was the ADS-CFT correspondence. The ADS-CFT correspondence appears when you look at the low energy limit of some stack of D3 brains. Well, the low energy theory is described by the super Young Mills in the work volume of D3 brains, n equals 4 supersymmetry. But on the other side, you can look at the same setup by looking at what is the back reaction of this set of D brains on the geometry. And what happened here is that the angular directions, you have six extra directions that appear there, are untouched, but the radial direction is combined with the four Minkowski directions of the D3 brain to generate ADS-Phi. You also have a Phi from flux on the Phi sphere with n units, which is exactly the n on the field theory side. There's a very nice mapping between these theories. For example, you can look at the asymmetries here corresponding to a conformal group in the n equals 4 gauge theory. So what do we have here? We have a gauge theory, a strong coupling, and we have a weakly coupled gravity theory in some geometry. Okay, so that's an idea that is very promising to at least to track, to work on some some problems that we are interested in. We are basically interested in strongly coupled gauge theories, like such as QCD. But this is not, we can apply this idea directly, so we have to do some extra stuff to bring it closer to probabilistic theory. One of the things is you want to break supersymmetry in some amount because you want a theory, for example, with n equals 1 supersymmetry such that it can be chiral. And the way to do it on the D-brain side is to place a D-brain at the singularity. I show you here Calabi-Yau threefold just to have n equals 1 in 3 plus 1 dimensions. On the gravity side, it appears as replacing the Phi sphere here, these angular directions, by another five-dimensional manifold, which is referred usually as a non-spherical horizon, just basically because it's not a Phi sphere. But you also want to break conformal invariance. You want to induce some RC flow, some scale dependence. The way to do it is to introduce another ingredient that we have in type 2B string theory, which are D-Phi brains. And if your singularity is such that it has some two-dimensional submanifold, I will refer to it as the two-cycle, inside you can wrap two of the directions of the D-Phi brain, and for the point of view of your extra directions, it looks like a 3 plus 1 dimensional option. I will show you that this breaks conformal invariant on the gauge, conformal invariance on the gauge theory, and the way it appears on your supergravity solution is that you turn on some three-form flux, and the solution is no longer asymptotically ADS-Phi. So let me review what are the typical theories that arise from constructions using D-brains. Well, the typical are quiver gauge theories because they have some product gauge groups, with some ranks. For example, in this case, I will consider a case of SU engaged groups. And they typically have bifundamental matter. By bifundamental matter, I mean theory that looks like quarks that transform in fundamental representations, but each field here transforms under two gauge groups, and they transform in the anti-fundamental representation of one of the gauge groups and in the fundamental representation of the other gauge groups. There's a very simple way to encode this type of gauge theories. It's simply a diagrammatic way of encoding it, which is by means of a quiver diagram, which looks like this. This is an example of a quiver diagram. In a quiver diagram, each node represents a gauge group, can have different ranks, for example, and each arrow has some orientation, represents a field, a chiral field transforming in the anti-fundamental representation of one of the gauge groups, the one at its tail, and the fundamental representation of the one at its head. So far this is just a way of encoding what is the gauge group of this theory, what is the matter content of this theory, but in order to fully specify it, I also have to tell you what is a superpotential. The terms that can appear in a superpotential are gauge invariant terms, so the way that they will appear in a quiver diagram is by closed polygons. Gauge invariants or possible terms in a superpotential appear in a quiver theory as polygons, a close-oriented polygons. Let me tell you a little more about the specific type of geometries that I will consider. I will be interested on gauge theories, on D-brains, that appear on D-brains, on some singularities, and I will study the Archie flow on them. Okay? So I will consider n equals 1, so I will study Calabi-Yau of three-folds, but they are of specific type. The Calabi-Yau will be a cone with some radial direction. So here appears the base of the cone, which is what I call the five-dimensional non-spherical horizon, and this horizon will be further of some very specific type. A very specific type will be some circle or some U1 over a four-dimensional Delpezzo surface. The only thing that you have to keep in mind is that what is a Delpezzo surface is a CP2, a complex projective space CP2, blown up at n generic points. The blow-up process is you take a point and you replace it by the two sphere. The fact that this is generic means that they are not aligned. So far this is just for you to keep in mind that whenever I refer to a Delpezzo, I'm referring to a specific geometry here. So the structure of the singularity will specify or will determine the amount of supersymmetry of the gauge theory in the D-brain, what is the matter content of and what is the superpotential. So if you want, you can forget about what is the geometry here, and remember that whenever I talk about some singularity, I'm talking about some specific gauge theory in the D-brain. Okay? So let me make my last introductory comment, so you are more or less have the background that you need, which is let me study a specific sample that is even simpler than the ones I will discuss later, which is the gauge theory that appears on the deep brain, on a stack of D3 brains following the coniform. The gauge theory, it's again a quiver theory. By now we already know how to understand this. It's a gauge theory with two gauge groups. Both of them are SUN gauge groups. It has four chiral multiplets transforming the bifundamental representation. Here you have A1 and A2, and B1 and B2. It has a superpotential, which is quartic in these fields. Again, corresponds, it respects the rule I told you of closed polygons. And the theory has a conformal fixed point, meaning that you can look for the beta functions for all the couplings that you have here. You have three couplings, two gauge couplings, and one superpotential coupling. And you can find solutions where all of them vanish at the same time. So this is, so far, only with D3 brains probing the singularity. What happens when you also, you have a two cycle here where you can wrap the D5 brains. What happens if you put some D5 brains there? The gauge theory looks almost the same. The gauge group is modified, one of them, to SUN plus M, the other remains SUN. And the theory now is not conformal. What do I mean by non-conformal? Again, that you can look for solutions of the beta functions vanishing simultaneously for all the gauge couplings, the two gauge couplings and the superpotential coupling, and there are no solutions. So how do you study this theory? Well, you can say the theory is not conformal, but I can look at the small m with respect to unperturbing the conformal theory and studying some expansion in M/A. And this is what we are going to do. Okay? So you can find what are the beta functions for this theory. Here are the two inverse square gauge copies. In what follows, I will write down beta functions for the inverse square gauge copies instead of writing the beta functions for the ordinary gauge, the gauge copies, but it's the same thing. And as you see, it's a function of the R charges of the fields that appear here. If you want, it's a function of the anomalous dimensions. The wave function renormalization appears there in the R charges. So again, I told you we are going to work in the small M over N limit, and we will consider some expansion in M over N power, in powers of M over N. So for M equals 0, we have the conformal theory. Vanishing of the beta function determines the R charges of the two chiral multiples that you have here. And you will expect a linear order correction in M over N to these R charges. Well, the conifold has a very nice symmetry that you can read from here, which is that a symmetry that sends M to minus M and N to M plus N to lowest order in M over N. This is just inverting the sign of M. So this symmetry by itself is telling you that any odd power in any expansion in M over N will vanish in any quantity that you do. So at least the first order correction will appear at second order in M over N. Okay? You plug this back here and you can compute the beta functions. They are linear in M, what you expect, because they are zero for M equals zero, and they are of the same magnitude and opposite sign. So now you want to study what is the Archie flow that appears from this condition. Okay. So here I consider some starting point with some number of D3 brains and some number of 5 brains. Okay. Here, the number of these rings is the common, or the smaller of these two guys, M plus 4M, and the difference is M, so you see this is the same example that I was considering before. And from the previous transparency, what you have is that the larger gauge loops has a positive beta function. Remember, a positive beta function for the inverse square coupling, so it's the same. So here I'm plotting inverse square coupling as a function of the log of the usual Archie flow time. So what happened? Well, one of the gauge couplings, the inverse gauge coupling, goes to zero, so the coupling goes to infinity, and the other one goes to some value, the same original value of the other one. So here we hit infinite coupling, so in principle we don't know what to do. Well, the idea, due to Klebanov-Strassler, is that you can go beyond this point by turning to an alternative cyberdual description. You can dualize, perform cyberduality on this gauge loop that went to infinite coupling, and look what is the Archie flow before after that. So you do it, and what you see is that again the quiver comes back to itself with some modification of one of the ranks, the rank that was at infinite coupling. But again, the same calculation that you did before, you can do it again. The role of the two nodes will be interchanged. So the one that had a positive beta function will have the same value but with a different sign. And again, and the other one will be positive. And you can repeat the process several times. This is what one refers to as a duality cascade. It's an Archie flow that whenever you hit infinite coupling, you switch to an alternative cyberdual description. And the conifold, this particular example, has many interesting properties, which are the following. First of all, the flow is periodic. It's periodic in this sense, the sense that at every step in this cascade, we have the same quiver up to some modification in the ranks. The number of the D5 brains, the wrapped D5 brains that I told you was the difference between these ranks is constant. You see here it's 5m minus 4m, 4m minus 3m, 3m minus 2m, and it continues like that. And the number of these three brains, which is the smallest of these two numbers, is linear with t, which is the log of the scale, so it's logarithmic cascade. I won't consider what happens in the deep infrared of this cascade, but this cascade has also confinement and chiral symmetry breaking, and all this behavior is captured by a supergravity dual. So this is why you believe all this interpretation in terms of a sequence of cyberduality. So now that I have introduced cascades, and difference on singularities, let me give you a brief motivation of why we want to study this cascade. Well, they are a very interesting non-trivial and unusual Archie flow for strongly coupled gauge theories, so you are interested in studying these theories. There's an unrelated, in some sense, motivation for studying these geometries is that when you construct the supergravity duals of this that describes all this Archie flow behavior, you arrive at interesting geometries for a different application. They have received a very lately a lot of interest in the construction of Kachru and Kairos-Linde and Trivedi for realizing some cosmological models in string theory. They have modular stabilization. You can consider the motion of vibrations in these geometries, and you can have inflation and so on. Once you are introduced to the idea of duality cascade, you can also ask the following: what happens if I consider the supersymmetric theory like the MSSM and try to complete it to the UB following these same rules of cascading? Can the MSSM be at the bottom of a duality cascade? So what happened? This question was asked by Matthew Strassler, and what happened is that generically you reach a scale in the UB when you are playing all these rules of cascading beyond which you can't go. So if this you are in effective theory, there's no problem there, but if you can't realize that in a construction in string theory, you wonder or you are worried about what is the UB completion of such a cascade, or how you get rid of that limit scale. Another thing is, okay, how do we understand the A-theorem for these cascading gauge theories? The A-theorem, let me remind you, is the analog of the C-theorem in four dimensions. It's not a theorem, it's a conjecture, but basically it tells you that there's some quantity, which is the central charge A of the four-dimensional field theory, that measures the number of degrees of freedom of your theory, and it's monotonically decreasing along the Archie flow. Why now is a good moment to study these problems? Well, first of all, we have new field theory tools that we didn't have a year ago, let's say. Basically, we have, I will talk a little bit about it, we have A maximization and exceptional correction techniques that let us compute R charges in these field theories. This is a non-trivial problem. Even for very simple examples, wasn't known how to do it. We understand very well how to get gauge theories for difference on singularities, and I will also tell you what are the supergravity solutions that we can find. So let me consider a more generic example in the same line of the conifold example, but it's something that I will be interested in. Again, I told you I would be interested in quivers with product gauge groups with some ranks. The ranks, we have two contributions, in fact more than two contributions, as in the conifold. One contribution that will come from the regular D3 grains, and some other contribution, the conifold was, you have only one possibility here, coming from fractional grains, from wrapped D5 grains on some two cycles. In all the examples I will consider, well, except a couple of them, you can have more than two types of D5 grains. So this makes the problem more general. So, how we can choose these ranks, or how we can, if I give you the gauge theory, how can you see what are the possible regular and fractional grains that you can have? Well, chiral anomaly cancellation on the quiver tells you that the number of fundamental and anti-fundamental representations of each gauge group has to be the same. So it simply means that the number of incoming and outcoming arrows for any node has to be the same. This tells you that the ranks cannot be anything you want of the gauge group, but they have to be in the kernel of the intersection matrix defining the quiver. I haven't told you what the intersection matrix is, but it's a very simple concept. It's an anti-symmetric matrix that tells you what is the number of bifundamental fields between different nodes. For example, let's look at the first row here. It tells you that between node 1 and 2 there are two arrows. The minus sign is telling you what is the orientation, it's incoming. Between node 1 and 3 there's one arrow, again incoming. And the other one between node 1 and 4 and 1 there are three arrows. And this is what you have here. You have this intersection matrix, which by the way corresponds to a very specific singularity. It's a complex cone over the Petzold 1. and the kernel is two-dimensional. And these are the two basic, the two vectors in the basis of this kernel. One is a 1111, and the other one is a 1302. So you can choose the gauge group, the ranks of the gauge group, such that they are combinations of these two vectors. You immediately identify this as the D3 brain, the regular D3 brains. This is the case with only D3 brains. And you identify the second one as RAP D5 brains. So you can have the cases with only D5 brains, D3 brains, and cases where you also have D3 brains. As I told you, as you expect, this case will be non-conformal and will have some RC flow. So how do we compute the beta functions? Again, this is again the beta function I wrote before for the conifold, but for a general group. This was for SUN, this invariant was n, basically the number of colors, and for fundamentals and anti-fundamental representations, mattering the fundamental and anti-fundamental representation of SUN, this one is 1/2. And I wrote it instead of writing it in terms of large charges, I wrote it in terms of anomalous dimensions. You can also do that. Okay? So how do you find the R charges, at least in the conformal case? Well, you would expect that doing the same that we did in the conifold, asking for the beta function for the gauge couplings and the beta functions for all possible superpotential term equals to zero will give you the answer. In fact, it doesn't in many cases. Well, it's very rare that you find a case where it gives you what is the anomalous dimension, but it gives you a family of possible solutions. There's some freedom, and you need some principle to fix this freedom. And this was the problem that we had a year ago, let's say. Let me remind you that finding R charges, even for very simple theories like super QCD with the field in the adjoint representation, wasn't solved until the introduction of the A maximization principle. So, well, you can have different ways of fixing this freedom. One of them is symmetries. Maybe you are lucky enough that your theory has some extra symmetry. It happens in some cases that this symmetry fixes this freedom. So you have a very simple way out in some examples. The general answer is, okay, you use the process of the A maximization principle. What is A maximization? Let me just tell you that you can construct some central charge in the field theory that can be written in terms of R charges of the fields or anomalous dimensions if you want. And what Intrigator and Beck found is that the right assignation of R charges or anomalous dimensions is the one that maximizes locally this quantity. And there's also another way that at least applies to some of these examples, which was basically found by Chris and Johannes Walcher, which is based on exceptional collections. What you have to pick from here is that these methods give you an answer just in terms of things that you can read from the quiver. It's here in terms of ranks of gauge groups. This matrix here is very related to the number of bifundamental fields that you have in the quiver, so it's basically an intersection matrix. So all the information you need here, it's in terms of a quiver. So given a quiver, you can find the R charges if the gauge theory has an associated exceptional collection. So we have now a way of computing R charges. So let me say a few words of how these RG flows look in coupling space. So all the gauge couplings are positive quantities. So the inverse square couplings are also positive quantities. So to start with, if you have k gauge groups, you have a k-dimensional cone, just given by the positive axis, k-dimensional. There's also a constraint on the beta functions. You can prove it exactly. And that is that the sum of the beta functions weighted by the ranks of the gauge groups is zero in all these examples. You can use it, you can prove it using exceptional collections, and you can already smell that this is going to be related to a constant dilaton in a supergravity dual. And integrating this, it tells you that the sum of the inverse couplings weighted by the ranks of the gauge groups is a constant of the motion of the RG flow. So what happens? Well, let's start here. We have for the case of three couplings, this is the space defined by this cone. This condition is cutting a hyperplane in this space. So basically what you are left with the simplex here. So the Archie flow between dualizations will follow a straight line with the direction at any point given by the beta functions. There are constant beta functions that are giving you some field direction that tells you in which direction the Archie flow is going to follow. Once you reach one of these walls, it means that you are at zero inverse coupling, meaning that you reach a point at which the gauge coupling is infinity. So, as I told you, what you do here is you switch to cyber dual description. This will change the ranks, so it will change this condition. So you will appear in some reflection here to a different simplex, and so on. And you can repeat this process again and again. So the cascading energy flow in this way of looking at things will appear as a trajectory in the space of glued simplices. And some of the properties that you will see appear in this renormalization group flows, like some chaotic energy flows or so on, might be. You can infer some of this from this picture that looks like a biliary coupling space. So I talk about the conifold example. Let me tell you about a more complicated example. This is what is called the set of Hilbert surface, which is a two complex dimensional thing. I'm considering a complex cone over this surface. It has the topology of a two-sphere times another two-sphere. And when you look at the gauge theory that appears on the D3 brain probe in this cone, what you have is not only a single theory, but you have an infinite set of theories. These are, of course, dual theories in the infrared, meaning that you have a single UB construction, the string theory construction, but you have different infrared descriptions of the same thing. And this is what you have here. You have theories that are very simple, gauge theories that are very simple, like this one, where all the gauge groups are equal, and you have 8 by fundamental fields, and you have theories that are very complicated, such as this one. Okay, so this so far is without adding any D5 brain. These are all conformal theories. So you can ask, what is the relation between all these theories? How are they related by cyber duality? So what you have is you have all these theories, which is a constant of associated to a singularity, have four gauge groups. So that means that whenever you're at one of the theories, you have four possible choices of how to perform a cyber duality transformation. So what you expect is that if you stand on this theory, you will have four other gauge theories, which are four cyber duals on different nodes associated to it, emanating from it. So you expect some branching structure. And this is the structure that you find. It has something like a tree, as you expected, but it has some more things. In particular, it has some closed loops like this one. So we will see what this closed loop means. So far, I told you this is for only D3 brains on the singularity. These are conformal theories and how they are related to each other. As soon as you put a little small amount of D5 brains, the theories are non-conformal, you induce a cascade energy flow of the type I described. So this picture now becomes a map of the possible Archie flow paths that can be followed in some cascading fashion.
So before you add the 5 brains, this is the whole story? I mean, this isn't just a piece of a bigger diagram?
Yes, infinite diagram.
Oh, it is a piece of a bigger diagram?
Yes. So I only consider 11 theories or so.
Okay. But that's 11 out of a set of infinite.
Yes. But you already see that there are things here that are close. So basically, there's a closed trajectory. You can perform 4 cyber duality transformations and come back to the same theory. Based on the case of the conifold, what you expect is that, okay, I put some small number of D5 brains, I can perform these 4 cyber dualities and can come back almost to the same thing, which is a theory that differs from the original one by a small number of D5 brains, or by a net change in the.
What happens with the measurements when you go to the same theory? I mean, how do you measure the top level?
This is much, right? This is much even in cyber duality.
Yeah,
what you...
You have different gauge group, no?
Sorry?
With hyper duality, you have different gauge group. So if you return the same gauge group, then what do you do with the mesons? The extra mesons.
What extra mesons?
Well, Zyber duality always you have some extra signals, right?
Okay, yes.
So then if you make four Zyber dualities, you have four...
Oh, yeah, no, sure, right. But these things have some super... I'm not showing, but these here are all some superpotential. And in particular, they have some cubic superpotentials that when you find your mesons, become master for that mesons. You are interested in the infrared of the theory, so you have to integrate out these mesons using the equations of motion. Sorry, I didn't understand the question. Okay. Yeah, you don't generate a growing and growing number of that's the point. Very good. So these two theories that I was showing in the middle, here I have the two of them, which are the simplest that you can have. This one looks very much like a conifold. This is because this singularity is the C2 orbifold of the conifold. You can look at what is the Archy flow described by these two theories. Okay, if you start with one of them with some gauge couplings. What is the Archy flow that you follow? Again, at each step computing the R charges using a maximization, exceptional collections techniques, or whatever you prefer. Whenever you reach infinite coupling performance cyber duality transformation, integrating out massive fields and keeping on and going on. And what you have is that you have a flow which only involves these two quivers. As the conifold example that involved only one quiver, here you have only two gauge theories. And the Archy flow looks like this. You have inverse couplings, here different colors mean different gauge groups, and you have the log of the scale. So it looks very much like the conifold cascade. This is periodic again in the sense that you come back to yourself but with some modification of the number of these three brains. The D5 brains are constant. You can follow a period and see that the number of D5 brains is the same, and the number of these three brains goes linearly with the log of the scale. So far this is a simple generalization of what happened before. You can consider some other example, which is you start from some other one of the theory, and here I'm trying to construct the flow to the UV. Of course, going to the UV in an Archy flow is not the thing that you have to do, but you can ask, okay, what happens if I start in a theory here deep in the UV and construct a cascade to the infrared, and this is what you are going to get. So what you see is that we have here the same phenomenon that was appearing for if you started from the MSSM, meaning that you have a UV scale which you can't go beyond it. This is a duality wall. So now we have embedded in some construction using D-brain, so you have to worry about what is the completion or what happens beyond this scale. And you can prove analytically that this is not just numerically, that there's a scale here, that is there's an accumulation point that you can't go beyond that. And I would say some few words about what's the possibility of completion.
Can I ask a question? So when you prove the existence of the duality wall, do you take into account the anomalous dimension of operators? Because when you break conformal...
Yes, sure. You have to compute the anomalous dimension of all the operators.
How do you do this if the theory is not superconformal?
Yeah, well, this assumption that you are close to a conformal point. So you use, as I told you, you work in some expansion in M over N.
It's an assumption. You don't have an analytical proof.
You don't have an analytical proof. But I will tell you, I will construct supergravity solutions that describe all logarithmic Archy flows for all the Bezos surfaces. And this you can take that as an indication that what you're doing is correct.
So what's the wall in the supergravity solution?
We don't have supergravity solution for this, but I have some geometric idea of what this is. I will tell you.
So you don't have a supergravity solution where I see a wall.
You don't have a supergravity solution where you see a wall. There are. Let me tell you two things. There are supergravity solutions that have this exact same behavior, but in the infrared. For example, in the case with D7 brains.
But that's not the issue in the infrared.
It's not the same thing. And what I'm going to argue is that you can embed this in a larger singularity with more four cycles that will deform in some way that it generates the theory.
Yeah. Doesn't the M over N small condition start failing when you go?
It fails at some point here. But this accumulation, you can always get as close as this point as you want, right?
But then your assumption you're near a conformal point becomes worse.
Yeah, it becomes worse, but the fact that imagine you had some m and n values that let you go like 1,000 steps here, which it fails. Fine, you can go, but you can again start with a different set of values that go let you go like 10,000 steps, and you get closer. Okay, but again, the right way of thinking about this is flowing to the infrared. And I will tell you how can you probably start from the UV and go to the infrared and not don't.
It may be that this isn't a decoupled infrared. This is not a decoupled near horizon anything.
Okay, it can be, but I will tell you how it might work. But sure, if you work in some approximation and you see something that is as strange as this, you might, the first thing you have to think is that your approximation is breaking down. Okay, and let me tell you, before going to supergravity solutions, some other way in which you can study this Archie float. Here I put the curve for the Pezzo one, which was one of the singularities that I'm interested in. Again, this has four gauge couplings, and you can look at the space of two of the couplings whenever two of the other ones are zero. Meaning whenever either node 1 or node 2 is dualized, you can look at what is the value of the couplings for the other gauge whips. What we usually have in non-cascading Archie flows, it's a boring story. If you look at coupling space, you start at some UV fixed point and you go to some infrared fixed point, and you have some trajectories there. So the type of trajectories that you have here are of this type. Okay. So what I'm plotting here, okay, again, I'm plotting the space of two of the gauge couplings, the inverse gauge couplings. Each color here means different initial couplings. And you can see that you have three different qualitatively different types of behavior. You have some elliptic flows here, that they will be associated, of course, to the logarithmic flows I will talk about in a second. You have some trajectories in which the coupling seems to be moving between three connected ellipses, like these ones, kind of ellipses, and you have some diffuse plots here, okay? But what I want to tell you that is, of course, you should be worrying about, again, if I'm telling you that I have a periodic Archie flow, is that you never here violate the A theorem. Just because of this continuous reduction of the number of colors, you're not violating the A theorem. These are the same constructions that I showed you for F0, but for this specific singularity, blue dots and white dots correspond to different quivers. So you see that the periodic behavior, this elliptic behavior, corresponds to Archie flows that are trapped here. This quasi-periodic behavior that iterated between these three ellipses are Archie flows of this type. They move for some time in one of this set of theories. They jump to another set of the same theories and so on. And finally, there are other ones, which are these flows that look completely diffuse, that come from theories with a very large number of colors. Okay, so far the analysis was completely field theoretic. Okay, so you can worry about this. Like, are we working in the right limit? Are we doing a right approximation and so on? Is the idea of a cascade valid in this context? So what you really want to do is to find a supergravity dual that describes all this behavior, okay? And one of the first problems that you have here is that you didn't have for the conifold is that you don't have the metric for the Pezzos. I'm trying to find solutions for the Pezzos. But you don't have a metric. You know that its existence, but you don't know what the metric is. So you have to develop some method. And I will tell you a method that can, in principle, be generalized to many other, at least toric geometries, and to generate this very nice cascades. So what is the starting point? Well, we're interested in solutions with three-form flux, the ones studied by Granny and Polchinski. So the starting point is some work product, as usual, of some four-dimensional Minkowski space with some Calabi-Yau. Here you have the conifold in the other example. This will be a different thing here. And the three Phong flux, it's a combination of the Ramon-Ramon three Phong flux and the Neve-Schwarz-Neve-Schwarz. And the work of Ryan and Polchinski tells us that we have a supersymmetric solution if this three form is supported only in the Calabi-Yau, is imaginary self-dual, is a 2,1 form, and is harmonic. And again, this work factor is a function only on the coordinates of the Calabi-Yau. In our cases, it will be only a function of the radius. Okay. Once you have this solution, you can compute what is the five form, and you can compute what is the work factor. This is the volume 6 form in the Calabi-Yau. We have to look at the metric in a little more detail in order to find the solution. The metric in the Calabi-Yau, again, it looks like some radial direction, and here it looks like the five-dimensional horizon. But I told you that this was a U1 over a del pezzo. And the way the metric looks like is like this. It has a part that is the del pezzo metric, and it's a part here which has the fiber, and it has also a contribution from the Cayley form onto the del pezzo. Okay? So del pezzo 1 has del pezzo n. You have from n can be, I didn't tell you, but it can be, it cannot be anything. It can be from, it can go from 0 to 8, so you have up to 8, up to an 8 del pezzo, has n plus 1 harmonic 1-1 forms. One of them is the Cayley form, and the other ones, well, you can find the basis. This is a well-known fact about the del pezzos that satisfy a product of this form. It's very interesting because this is the Cartan matrix of En. So you have these bases. When you have these bases of harmonic 1-1 forms, you can construct directly the 2,1 form that satisfies the conditions that you need in order to find a supersymmetric solution. This is a 2,1 form because this is a 1-0 form. It has support only on X, it's imaginary self-dual, and it's harmonic. And here you have some coefficients, which are just coefficients defined in your solution so far, which can be chosen a priori at will. Okay, so once you have the solution, well, you want to think about what is the interpretation in terms of Dirac. So you say, okay, what is the number of d5 brains in this solution? Well, this comes from computing the flux of the three form over three cycles. These three cycles will be associated to u1s over the Poincaré duals, two cycles of these 1-1 forms. And what you see is that in these solutions, the number of d5 brains for every specific type are fixed and are given by these coefficients, because I told you that these coefficients don't depend on the radial direction that was the has to be associated with the scale in the gauge theory. The number of d5 brains is fixed. The number of d3 brains, again, comes from integrating over the five-dimensional horizon the five form, which you had an expression in the two transparencies before, takes this form. Here I put the expression for the conifold for comparison. It looks very much like the conifold. Okay, this value you can absorb it in the R0 here. And with the m square of the conifold, remember that you only have one choice of fractional brains in the conifold, replaced by this product of different types of fractional brains that you can have, contracted with the Cartan matrix of En. So what we have is that the number of these three brains grows logarithmically with the radius. And finally, you can solve for the warp factor. Again, it looks very much like the conifold, but with this expression replacing m squared. So what you have is that you have found a supergravity solution that describes all the behavior that you have seen. Again, it doesn't describe the duality walls. I will talk about it. But without knowing the metric for the del pezzo. So now you want to go beyond and you can try to match the beta functions that you computed in order to check your approximation using supergravity. Let me tell you that this is why this is not trivial. I told you that you have up to the pezzo 8. And DPN has n plus 3 gauge loop. This is basically the Euler characteristic that is telling you what are the different ways in which you can wrap the brains. So you can imagine that if the conifold had 2 gauge loops, you can here have up to 11 gauge loops, which is 8 plus 3. So you will be very lucky if you can match all the beta functions here. And one of the beta functions, one combination of the beta functions, I already told you that you can match, which was this one, that the beta functions weighted by the ranks. This corresponds in the supergravity to a constant, the constant dilaton of the Gragnapolchinsky solutions. And there are other set of there's another set of n possible combination of the of the beta functions, which is the following. Here, if you remember these vectors SI, were the vectors that indicated which are the contribution of a wrapped DeFi brain to the ranks. Here is the regular DeFi brain, here's the wrapped DeFi brain. You have n combinations of this type here. And you can compare this to the inverse coupling computed as a period of the B field, and you see that they match. How they match is non-trivial. You have to use some correspondence between the intersection of two cycles in the Del Pezzo and some anomalies of U1 baryonic charges on the gauge theory, but it matches. So what you have seen is that even though you didn't have in all these examples the C2 symmetry that you have for the conifold that let you compute the corrections, let you say that the corrections were of second order in I over n, you see that you have matched all the beta functions that you computed in that way, well, not all, but n plus one of them, all minus two, using supergravity. So this makes you very confident that what you are doing is correct.
What is the A minimization principle on the supergravity side?
Well, A maximization principle in supergravity is not known. It was described by trying to compute the what is the origin is not known. It was discovered by trying to compute the R charges of baryonic operators, or what are called d-baryonic operators in these gauge theories, from an ADS-CFT dual, which is you just compute what is the volume of some wrapped D3 brains. But what is the real origin of this maximization is not known. It's just an identity that have to be two conditions that have to be satisfied if you use super conformal invariance.
Now, on the gauge theory side, when you were talking about different assets in the RJ flow.
Sorry?
When you talked about different possible renormalization group flows in the RJ space, there were ambiguities. You were saying you can do cyber duality on this node or on the other node.
Okay.
Is there some reflections that you can see on the supergravity where there is an option? How you do that and how it's reflected.
Yeah, well, that's on one side. You have this problem that you're talking about. The description on the gauge theory side looks very, if you say, discrete, and it looks like you can have many choices. Different nodes can be dualized at different points, and so on. And on the other side, you have supergravity description that is completely smooth once you choose this fraction.
I would say it's unique.
It's unique, yes.
So why there is this discrepancy?
Well, no, it's not discrepancy. The entire mapping between the two things is hidden here, right? This vector here is what you change whenever you perform a duality, and it depends on how you perform the duality, and it will match what you do here. These vectors that tell you what are the ranks, these vectors and these vectors, and they vary in a discrete way, and the way in which vary with scale depend or specifically what are the initial conditions, but the matching is perfect.
But
I mean, you can have more pure solutions than other ones if you want, which are corresponds to setting one type of flux or one type of fractional brain. But whenever you mix two of them, the behavior on the gauge theory side looks very complicated.
Should I assume that these choices that I think exist in the gauge theory side are somewhat unphysical? Because on the supergravity side, it looks like it's not, and there is no ambiguity in the RG flow.
But it depends on how you choose the fractional brain, so it depends on how you choose the NS flux
But that has no physical, this has no effect in the supergravity solution.
Yeah, it doesn't have any effect.
Yeah,
but
because
so
it's, you know, the fluxes you can keep.
Let me tell you, this periodic flows and these quasi-periodic flows that I mentioned are of the same type and are logarithmic and are described basically by this type of solution. There's no secret there. Now you can worry about the other ones that I tell you, okay? And they have to do with what I want to tell you now. But yeah, the story looks very different on one side of the other. Okay. So this was the solution I wrote for you. And you see that this becomes zero at some point in the infrared. Okay, this is the same story that you have if you look at the Clevan upsilon solution. This is a solution that in the UV coincides with the right solution that incorporates all the behavior in the infrared, but it's similar at some point in the infrared. So you worry about what is going on in the infrared. Again, in the conifold, what happens is that the conifold is deformed. There's a three sphere that becomes of finite size even in the infrared, and that cures everything. When you consider this work product replacing the Calabi-Yau that was the conifold by the deformed conifold, you find that there are no problems here. In this case, we can try to do the same thing, but again, we have the problem that we don't have any metric for the Petzold. We don't even have a metric for the deformed Petzold. So how far can you go with this? Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about it. For those that you are not familiar with this is a PQ wave, or you can think about a septoric diagram. This is describing the Petzold surface, which I told you is two complex dimensional, or four real dimensions. Okay, so on every point here, you should think about a two torus fiber. You have to think about the two torus fiber over each point of this diagram. So this is a picture of the singularity. What are the segments? Well, the segments tell you when one of the two circles that are in the torus go to zero size, and the intersection of the segments tell you when the two of them go to zero size. So you see that the segments are of course two spheres, because they only have one circle there, and it's going to zero size at the end points. Here you have some compact force cycle, which is a Del Pezzo, and so on. The toric diagram for CP2 is a triangle, and this is an hexagon, so you already see that this is CP2 blown up at 3 points. You took 3 points and you replaced it by two spheres. Okay? Let me tell you a little more about it. This diagram has subwebs, meaning webs that are in equilibrium by themselves. And I'm not explaining it to you, but these subwebs are in one-to-one correspondence to non-conformal deformations that you can have in the gauge theory, meaning that these vectors, they're in one-to-one correspondence with these vectors that you find in the kernel of intersection matrix. Right? The possible ranks that you can have are in one-to-one, or the possible fractional ranks that you can have are in one-to-one correspondence with these subwebs that you have. And once you have a subweb, at least in this pictorial way of thinking about things, you can think about, okay, let's shrink these two things here, which locally I'm not telling you, but they are a conifold, and separate them, some finite distance. This distance that appears here, this dashed line here, this dashed blue line, is representing a three sphere. So what you see is that, okay, you can at least, using toric geometry, which DP3 is a toric Del Pezzo, you can think about what are the possible deformations of the geometry that you can have. And it can tell you something more. You can look at what you are left here after the deformation. And in this example, for example, it's the conifold. This is the toric diagram for the conifold.
These are two spheres, the blue line?
Yes. Okay, so how can this be reflected in the gauge theory? Okay, well, I told you for Del Pezzo, and you have n different type of fractional brains that you can have. Okay, basically these roots of En. Okay, you can have many different choices of this number of fractional brains that you can have. These AIs in here, or here, these NIs here. But you can consider the example for simplicity, but it's the same reasoning, that there's a hierarchy of them. There's one of them is much smaller than the other one, and all of them are much smaller than the number of these three brains that you have. Of course, the solution that I showed you told you that there's a logarithmic dependence of n. So everything works fine in the UV, but as soon as you are going to the infrared, you are going to hit some point in which n is of the order of one of the n. And this is going to define your scale, or the log of a scale here. And you wonder, well, what happens there? Of course, this is a point where you have to change your solution. Okay, this is an example in which I have n brains, nd3 brains, and I have md5 brains of the type I was. This is exactly the quiver theory that corresponds to the toric diagram here. Okay? And what you see that is happening here in the gauge theory is easy. You already know what's going on. You look at these two gauge groups, and you see that they have 2n colors, and they have 2n flavors, meaning that they are SUN with the same number of colors and the number of flavors. And you know, and then you look, okay, how is the D brain seeing the geometry? The way the D3 brain sees the geometry is by its moduli space. So you can compute what is the moduli space in this case. And the moduli space for this kind of theory is deformed. You have to take the relation between mesons and baryons of these gauge groups, and it's deformed with some scale here. And you have to perform the same game for these two guys here. Again, I tell you, these are mesons of these two gauge groups, but these mesons of these two gauge groups are not gauge invariant.
Baryon in the...
There's a baryon here also.
What is the baryon in the
brain? Well, baryon in the brain configuration are like wrapped D3 rings. That you can associate some cycles to each node, and the baryons will correspond to some difference. Some difference of cycles are the cycles that are wrapped by the D3 rings. So these mesons are not gauge invariants under all of the gauge groups. You can work in some approximation, and these mesons are really bifundamental fields of the other fields. So you add these conditions. You have two here, to the superpotential that you originally have, using some Lagrange multiplier, such that the equation of motion of that Lagrange multiplier fixes this condition for you. And you look at what is the theory that you have at the end. You have in the infrared, or for scales much smaller than this lambda. And what you have is basically the conifold theory, which is not a surprise for you, because it was exactly the theory that the geometry was telling you that you were going to have. So what you have here, okay, I didn't tell you, but this can be embedded in a cascade that is of exactly the same type that we found a solution for, that is logarithmic, periodic, and so on. So you have basically a logarithmic cascade for DP3 in this case, in the UV, which is very well described by our solution, glued to a conifold in the infrared, that for the conifold you even know what is the infrared termination of the cascade. So again, what I was going to say about walls, well, you can think about theories where the geometry is more complicated. You have 2-4 cycles instead of having only one. You can always engineer that. You can use all these toric geometry methods such that at some scales there's a deformation, that the theory after the deformation looks exactly the same like the theory, very close, arbitrarily close, as much as you want to the duality wall. So why didn't you see the wall? Well, why you saw the wall? Because you were considering just part of the geometry, not the entire geometry.
But this Missouri matrix M is made out of the same A and B, right?
Sorry?
This Meson matrix M is made out of this field A and B itself.
Well, this A and B are the numbers, the names are given here, are made of, basically they are made of this field here, this field here, this
field. Right?
Yeah.
I see. So in this way, this Meson do not include A and B.
Sorry.
So A and B is not M there.
No. No, this B is not the same B. Yes.
Yeah, because otherwise I would ask, you know.
No.
What's the relation?
No, if you want, you lose 4 gauge groups.
Uh-huh.
2 of them you lose them by considering the gauge invariance under these gauge groups, some kind of confinement, and the other two gauge groups you lose them because these mesons get an expectation value, and that's the way you get. So let me conclude. So I explained to you that we constructed some duality cascades that have very different behaviors, logarithmic flows, we have walls, okay, now we have to understand them, but we have an idea. We have periodic, quasi-periodic, and chaotic flows. We have supergravity solutions for the Petzos, even without a metric, and I think that this procedure that we have can be extended to other singularities. We have the infrared behavior of logarithmic cascades. We have found that they led at least in some examples to multiple warp geometries, and you can think about some applications again to the KKLT idea of throwing some D3 brains there or so on. One further directions, well, one of the things that you can try to understand is what is the how the A theory is appearing in all these models, how the numbers of degrees of freedom are measured in some gauge invariant way, how this is decreasing, and what is the relation to some computation that you can do in supergravity. Okay, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Questions, sir?
Is it known in the supergravity solution where two conifold singularity or deformed conifold attached? So this is like some local part of.
Yeah, it looks like a local part.
Is there explicit?
Well, I would say.
At least the simplest ones. Yeah, I'm
no, I don't, I'm not aware that this is known. Okay. But what I would say is that. If you look at this solution that we wrote. Okay, which is written in terms of some a single R0 here. You can, of course, this is a constant, and you can have as many constants as you want. So you can split this R0 into different R0s just given by the fluxes, and these are going to give you different scales and so on in the supergravity. But I'm not sure about how to identify these local conifolds in the supergravity.
Can you identify?
I have a question. Do you have any thoughts on how to identify the last two gauge couplings on the gravity side?
The last two?
You identified n plus 1 of the n plus 3.
Ah, no, no. The remaining two ones? No, I really don't have any idea.
Any more questions? Thanks.
Thank you.